This has been one of them.
So, who's your friend?
Peter Bosch, the future of rock and roll.
There's so money, you don't even know. That's what I could do.
Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has left the building.
What? Turn it off, it gets in the way.
Welcome.
Let me bring you up to speed.
Soon, very soon, there won't be any books or newspapers, no telephones.
Welcome.
We'll only be able to communicate with email and QVC. We'll all be interactive.
You've got mail.
All you need to see and hear, you'll see and hear without ever having to rise from your silly posturepedic. I'm talking about high definition. I'm talking about virtual reality. I'm talking about living in the fast lane, the electronic information superhighway.
Man, it's the link.
Welcome.
The electronic information superhighway.
Welcome.
Mixedup.com.
Man, it's the link.
I'm talking about
Mixedup.com.
Welcome.
There they go. Two criminal geniuses locked away together.
Mixedup.com.
Who knows what diabolical schemes they might concoct.
Mixedup.com.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Hey there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Help us with our recovery. Go to WBAI.org and help us by joining the Buddy System. The more people we have on a recurrent basis giving money to the station, the less we'll have to have fund drives. Help us cut down on those and we'll do what we can for you. WBAI.org. Buddy. Make a difference.
Yo, check this out. This is Chuck, your public enemy number one, the rapper without a pause, bringing the noise and fighting the power right here to the Sights and Sounds. That's right, Sights, 99.5 WBAI.
tomorrow I speak. Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun. I'll wait for you.
Good evening. You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. I'm Catherine, your host for this evening. You're tuned to Earth at Midnight, fused with Heart of Mind. And my co-host, Paulette Spencer, is on assignment this evening, so you are going to be sharing this few hours, I would say, with myself. Well, hour and a half. And I have some interesting things to share with you. And one of them is a really interesting event that's going to be coming up this weekend. It's not my event, not connected in any way, but it looked like it was going to be very interesting. And it has something to do with a special event of meditation that's going to be taking place in the park. So I'll be talking about that in a little while, letting you know how you can make that connection if you want to get involved in a meditation. And, you know, I think it's something that will benefit us all to really take the time to sit back, to breathe, to remember who we are. And I'm not saying that we necessarily forgot our name, certainly no, but sometimes we forget who we are underneath the name, underneath the identity. And it is very, very helpful for us to make that connection to the part of us that pre-existed even our life in this world, that is connected to the source, that is connected to the soul. And so when we meditate, and when we breathe, and when we go deep within ourselves, it allows us to be able to pull back from the craziness that we engage in the world, or that the world is engaged in, and we are sometimes drawn into it just by being here, by association. And so it's always good to have an opportunity to take a breath, take a step back, become centered, and remember that all the madness in the world isn't necessary to internalize that. So we can't really avoid it, I would say, but we don't have to internalize it in such a devastating way that we can become sick, or that we can lose track of what's important, what's really important to ourselves and in our lives. And one of the things that is really interesting about being here is to come to the realization that the world is really in a state of transformation, that all of the efforts that we have been seeking to change, I believe we're really beginning to see that. We're really beginning to notice that the world is different, that people are beginning to come to the table to talk about peace, that leaderships are changing, and parties are being elected that would never have been expected to happen. I believe this happened in Spain, where they have really routed out and defeated in many ways the conservative parties. And I think that all of the protest and all of the working of people to demand their liberation and freedom from the manipulation of power groups and, I would say, politicians, but I believe most politicians are owned and manipulated. And it's really power groups behind the scene that are controlling a lot of what's going on. But that control is being lost. I believe humanity is finally edging into that state of grace where we have the upper hand. I mean, I see it even in some of the prosecutions or charges that are being brought against certain members of the law enforcement who have broken the law or who have overstepped their bounds and harmed or killed someone through excessive force. I'm seeing more response in that area. And there are peace conversations happening in Norway with the Taliban and the Afghanis. And there are other kinds of peace talks happening all around the world. In the Philippines, one of the rebel groups there are disarming themselves and going into the peace process. And so even though it's a bit far and few between, I'm still seeing what I never really saw before. It's very amazing to me that peace is really beginning to break out in small measure around the world. And this is possible because we as human beings, as the collective humanity, have reached a place, a state of being, where really we've just had enough of the violence and the killing and the injustice that we see in the world. And when we look at a lot of this decision on behalf of humanity, it has an energetic effect. It has a growing momentum that lifts the vibration within which we all live. And as the vibration lifts, it affects more people and it affects more people. And as well, we have energy coming into the planet from the central sun, the center of our universe. And that energy, where we have moved into this higher frequency, sort of a belt of frequency because of where we are at this moment in time, and there's a very high vibration that's flowing into the planet. And this is also having an impact on the raising of our collective vibrations. And we're seeing this in a lot of truths being exposed. We're seeing it in arrests being made in the financial industries and in sports, you know, for corruption. We are also seeing a lot of resignations and retirements of people at the top of a lot of these corrupt organizations. And if we start to put the pieces together, at least I'm beginning to see a picture out of the puzzle. Still a lot of blank spots. There's still a lot of violence going on. There's still chaos happening. There are many earth changes that are occurring. But all of it is kind of a heightened situation that makes it almost impossible to continue to ignore. And when they came out of the, the G8 saying that, oh, we've made a commitment to lower the carbon footprint on the planet. And so, you know, some really shocking things are occurring. And if we look for them, we can begin to see that something is being stirred up in our world for change, and it's beginning to be expressed in a positive way. And there may be some of you who even are feeling that expression in your own life. Maybe you feel just a little bit lighter. Maybe there's a little bit more cooperation and kindness that you are feeling or maybe witnessing in the world. It's maybe small, but it's there if you choose to see it. And I'm hoping that you will make that choice to see it. I'm going to play a piece for you. It's called The Paradigms. They Are a Shifting. It's actually on the internet, so you can find it on YouTube. And the lyrics are by Zen Gardner, and it's sung by David Griffith. And this was brought to my attention on one of the networking sites that I belong to. And I just thought it was so perfect that I'd share it with you this evening. And let's see if we can get it to play. Okay, so I'm going to pause because they're apparently... Let's try this.
Come gather around, people, get out of your car. The cameras around you all know who you are. You thought this would happen in some time afar, but it's happening right now before you. As the waves you saw mounting now flood where you are, for the paradigms they are a shifting. Religions, Freemasons, Illuminati and all, they each work in concert to devise a fall. Will you look around and take up the call? This world they've contrived is a prison, so you'd better wake up or get locked in their walls, for the paradigms they are a-shifting. Come senators, congressmen, all who are bought, you know you are crooked with fear of fraud. You neglected the poor, have not sought. We know you're all working against us, but in your devices you soon shall be caught, for the paradigms they are a shifting. The curtain is drawn, now all can see
The matrix is not all it's cracked up to be. It's we that they fear, since we'll always be free. No matter what evil befalls us, just let in the light and the darkness will flee. For the paradigms they are a-shifting. And so we wonder just what can we do. Know that to truth, love and conscience be true. The awakening's happening to me and to you. There's no way that they can control it. So follow your heart, the vibrations are true. For the paradigms, they are a-shifting.
And that was a really interesting little song, The Paradigms, They Are A-Shifting. And let's see if I can return to... Okay. It's a complicated little setup here that we have at the studio, and we have two computers shifting on one screen, moving back and forth between some of the options that we can play for you. And so I am here with you. You're listening to Earth at Midnight, also Heart of Mind, and I'm Catherine. I'm going to play another little bit of information for you here. Let's see. Let's see. We're listening now to David Darling, Thy Will, Not Mine Be Done. So let's see if we can open this folder.
There will be mountains to climb, and valleys dark as the night. Well, I didn't have it until I was 36. Mm-hmm. And it came after 10 years of intense longing and practice and prayer and meditation. I'd been instructed by a great Tibetan teacher in Ladakh and taken the vows of Mahayana Buddhism. I'd plunged into Sufism and worked with the poetry of Rumi and been instructed by great Sufi teachers. I had worked passionately with a great Hindu teacher, and I had really, really longed and hungered and burned and yearned, and I had had a series of smaller mystical experiences that had completely convinced me of the essence of the divine, that the divine is here and the divine is in us. So it was the culmination of an enormously intense period of discipline. And it happened in Paris. I was living in Paris, and I'd actually been to dinner with great friends, and it had been a wonderfully happy dinner, and I went back, and I was living in a tiny little maid's room, which was surrounded by mirrors, and I walked in and looked in the mirror and saw that there was nobody there, and it was very scary. And then, until I saw that everything was dancing, there was like flames dancing in the mirror. And I walked unsteadily to the window and opened the window, and it was an 18th century courtyard with Paris behind, and everything disappeared, and just white light, white diamond light. And because I was a scholar and a student of mystical literature, I knew that what I was receiving was the initiation, enlightenment experience. It's just the beginning. It sounds very grand, but it's actually 101. This is just hundreds of thousands of people have had this experience. The whole universe was just white light. I couldn't see anything, just this light, this amazing diamond white light. And it's, the light isn't something you see out there. You know that you are one with this light. It and you are the same. And you can't explain that. It's just what you know when you have this experience. And the light is also joy, it's also bliss, it's also sweetness, it's also calm. It's immense, immense love, love beyond imagining. And I was drowned almost in this sea of light. And then I stood there and stood there and stood there. It went on for many, many, many minutes. And then the universe reappeared. But this time, everything that I thought was so solid looked very, very gentle, and it was suffused with light. So everything was glowing, and I understood beyond thought that everything that we see is actually a crystallization of light energy. And this goes exactly with what modern physicists are saying. You see, the most cutting-edge science and the deepest mysticism are now arriving at a marriage. And this is the essence of reality. And knowing the mystical traditions as I do, I know, and as many people do, that this experience has been had by people all over the world in all of the different religions. This is the essential experience of the nature of the universe. And it's open to everyone who wants it, because the divine is not trying to protect this secret. The divine is longing to give this secret to everybody. But you have to turn up in the relationship. You have to do the work. You have to work. You have to love. You have to turn up. And that's not because God is a sadist. It's because God wants you to have the ultimate experience, which is the rapture and the bliss of knowing the reality.
I've been traveling down this river, so many rocks pop up in my sight. I got to make some quick decisions. Should I go left or should I go right? I pray for guidance and protection. Keep on believing, and little things on.
I was born in India, and to be born in India is to be born in a world which is loved as sacred. So from the beginning of my life, I lived with people who found everything sacred, the rivers, the trees, the flowers. And although I was born to Protestant parents, I had a Hindu cook, I had a Catholic nurse, I had a Muslim driver, and from very early on in my life I understood that there was one divine force and many ways of connecting with it and expressing it in reality. Mm-hmm. I was sent to school when I was 9 in England, and I felt as if I'd been locked in a refrigerator, because after the warmth and the passion and the joy and the beauty and the splendor and the religious intensity of in India, England felt frightfully cold. But
and I wanted to let you know at this juncture who you're listening to. And this is Andrew Harvey. Andrew Harvey is the author of the book The Hope, Heart of Yoga, and The Teachings of Rumi, three separate books. And they're quite beautiful books that help us to find our way into the nuances of spirituality and how to get into the activism of spirituality. And he has also a book called Light of the Flame. It's one of those 365-day prayer books. Also, Radical Passion, Sacred Love and Wisdom and Activism. So he is really someone who has done a great deal in the world. He is founder and director of the Institute of Sacred Activism, an international organization focused on inviting concerned people to take up the challenge of our contemporary global crisis by becoming inspired, effective, and practical agents of institutional and systemic change in order to create peace and sustainability. Sacred activism is a transforming force of compassion in action that is born of a fusion of deep spiritual knowledge, courage, love, and passion with wise, radical action in the world. The large-scale practice of sacred activism can become an essential force for preserving and healing the planet and its inhabitants. And you can find more about Andrew Harvey at andrewharvey.net. And you'll find about more about his work and his activism, what he's doing in the world. And I happen to think he's a very special individual. But there are many of you out here in the world doing great work. There are many people right here on the radio station and doing great work. So I think it's important from time to time to allow ourselves to be inspired by the work of others and understand that we're not in it alone, that there are many who are working around the globe to transform the world in which we live. And we can only do our best. We can do what we can do. But in addition to the sacred activism, I would say it's important to uphold within yourself a sense of your own integrity and to take steps always to nourish and heal and restore and, in a way, reboot, so that as we continue to work for positive change, we don't burn ourselves out. So there's a lot that we can do to keep ourselves uplifted and moving in a positive direction as we do work in the world to heal and transform it. I'm going to go back to the interview with Andrew Harvey. And a little bit later, if we have time, I'm going to play one of his meditations, because he also offers some very powerful meditations. So stay tuned. And we're going to go back to the interview with Andrew Harvey.
I overachieved wildly, and when I was 21, I was elected to be a Fellow of All Souls. A Fellowship to All Souls is the highest English academic honor, and since I had absolutely no money, I was completely thrilled. But the next years were not happy years. I wasn't a happy young man, because I really understood that the world was falling apart, and my own life was falling apart. When I was 25, I returned to India, and I had a series of overwhelming mystical experiences which took me completely by surprise, because I had become a Marxist in my teens. I had decided that that was the only way the world could possibly be transformed, was by political revolution. And here I was going back to India, not expecting anything but to return to the roots of my own childhood. And a series of tremendous mystical experiences woke me up to another kind of reality. I then went on a very serious spiritual journey. I went up into the Himalayas to Ladakh, where I met a very powerful and beautiful Tibetan teacher. I went to live in Paris, where I studied with Sufi mystics. Sufism is the mysticism of Islam. I plunged into Hinduism by becoming the disciple of a Hindu teacher. And at the age of 36, I had an awakening experience. The whole world disappeared into divine light and then reappeared, soaked and saturated with divine light. And I realized that everything is a manifestation of the consciousness of God, and that we are all united with that consciousness in the deepest part of ourselves. I asked myself then the question, why have I had this realization? What is this realization for? And I had the honor of interviewing the Dalai Lama on the day that he won the Nobel Prize in Oslo in 89. And I asked him at the end of the interview, "Your Holiness, this is an absurd question, but what is the meaning of life? And at that moment, he laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed, because as everybody knows, one of the greatest things in this world is the laugh of the Dalai Lama. And I have this project of making a CD in which it have on one side the laughter of the Dalai Lama, on the other side the purring of my cat. So between the two sounds, I think a great deal of consolation could be shared. But he gave me the most amazing answer. He said, the meaning of life, Andrew, is to embody the transcendent. Not to go off into the transcendent, not to go off into the light, not to leave this world, but to embody it, to bring it down into your mind, into your heart, into your body, into your will, and into your actions. And that was a perfect answer, and it set me on a journey which went through many, many, many different permutations, but led me to the vision of what I call sacred activism that I am now sharing with as many people as I can get my hands on. And my book, The Hope, arose out of a lifetime spiritual search. What I believe is this. I believe that love doesn't mean a hill of beans unless we act on behalf of the voiceless, the oppressed, the damaged, the disinherited, the degraded. And I also believe that the deepest meaning of our crisis, this tremendous and shattering and very menacing and very difficult world crisis that we are now so obviously living through, is that it is a crisis designed to galvanize a comatose and paralyzed humanity into claiming the sacred power of divine consciousness within, and then putting it into radical, wise, clear, focused action on every level, very, very fast. Not just to save the planet, which is obviously now in tremendous danger, but also to help us go to the next evolutionary stage of our own evolution. We are a very damaged humanity at this moment, but the divine is within us, and the crisis is saying to each one of us, get off your ass, do something, love the world, and put your love into action. Choose something you care deeply about, and join with others to do something real about it. Everybody can do this. And since my book came out 2 years ago, it's had a tremendous reception. Many, many thousands of people have read it. And all over the world, people are responding to this call, which is why, despite all the facts, despite all the evidence, despite all the pain and horror and sadness that is erupting everywhere, my heart is now filled with hope. I know that we are going to get through. It's going to be very difficult, but there are on the earth hundreds of thousands of ordinary, humble, simple, decent people who now realize just in what danger we are, and who are willing, increasingly willing, to put their lives at stake, to do something real about the situation. So that's my life.
And a beautiful message it is that you bring with your life.
It's the message, really, of all of the great teachers of humanity, and I don't count myself amongst them. I'm not worthy to wash their underpants or do their shoelaces, but it's the message of Jesus, it's the message of the prophet, it's the message of the Buddha, it's the message of Ramakrishna, it's the message of everybody who wakes up. Mm-hmm. God is real. There is a divine presence in everyone and in everything, and the only possible response to that presence is to love and serve all beings, and that is the only thing that will ever make anyone truly happy, because all the other things that we look for can be destroyed, but the presence can never be destroyed. And the joy that you get from helping people and serving animals and really being a part of this great new birth that's trying to take place on the earth, that joy is not something that anything can take away from you, because that joy the world cannot give or take away. That is an internal joy. And that's the great secret of life. Everybody somewhere knows that. There's a marvelous story about Mother Teresa, which I'd love to tell you. This is such a great story. This is a story actually told by a friend of mine. Mother Teresa just had a series of heart attacks, and she was very, very ropey. I mean, she was fragile. And the nurses were very worried about her, the other nuns. And one day a big businessman came to see her, and he was dripping with gold and jewels, and he fell on the floor and he said, "Oh, Mother Teresa, you are the greatest person that's ever lived on this earth." And she got extremely embarrassed, and she said, "Okay, get up." And she says, "Why do you think this?" Just laughing. And he said, "Oh, because you have given up everything." And she said, "Stop right here." She said, "You are the one who's given up everything. You've given up meaning, you've given up passion, you've given up joy, you've given up the meaning, passion, and joy that come from really knowing that with all your faults and follies and flaws, you are truly trying to do something for other people. I have not given up anything. I am filled with the joy of God. Not because I'm a good person, but because I just turned up and every day tried to do my best. So until you realize that it is you who is the real renunciate, you really don't know anything about life." And he freaked out and ran out of the room. But that's one of the great stories. And
that's a great story.
It goes to the core of life, I think.
That's a beautiful story, in fact, because I think that's where most people get lost.
Yes.
In thinking that someone who's giving service has given up and given up themselves, and thinking that those who embrace the material wealth and the value of things are the ones that are doing the smart thing. So, but the truth is, and we can see it in the media, those people who are embracing wealth and fame are not doing so well.
Well, they don't seem that happy to me.
On a personal level, they don't seem to be doing that well.
How could you?
And so perhaps we can talk to our listeners a bit, because we're talking to regular folk.
Of course.
Who
I'm a regular folk. Sort
who
of.
Don't make much, but give a lot in terms of our radio station. People who don't make much tend to give quite a lot when it comes to
things. The poorer people are always the one who are the most generous. I lived in India for so long, and don't go to the rich, go to the poor for help, because they're the ones who know what life is.
Mm.
Right.
So true. So, but what I would like to speak to is your transition from being like a Marxist to understanding this the spiritual essence within you, because that's where a lot of people are who listen to this radio station. They're very involved in the politics, and people tend to get so attached to their politics that it almost, I would say it's almost a violent attachment to a certain way of thinking. And they tend to exclude other ways of thinking or diminish other people's expression. And I'm curious to know how that transition was expressed in your life from Marxism.
Such a wonderful question. First of all, I have the greatest reverence for Marx. I think Marx was a completely brilliant person who understood, especially the early Marx, the real nature of power and how injustice is fueled by economic factors. This is very important, because anybody who reads Marx with an open heart knows that money and power go together and injustice follows. And those structural connections are extremely, extremely precise. And I think one of the terrible things that happens in American society is that greed manipulates people into decisions that blind them to the effects of greed. The millions of people who are living on almost nothing, the appalling treatment of animals, the devastation of the environment. So my spiritual shift has not led me to be less political.
Mm-hmm.
I am as political as I was when I was 18, and I see things, if possibly, even more clearly, but they're lit up by a different light.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was that I was born to a religious family, and I was surrounded by ordinary, simple, but very deeply religious people when I was a child in India. So I was brought up in that atmosphere. Then I lost my faith and I plunged into political passion. And then I had, as I said, these extraordinary experiences of divine clarity, of divine beauty, and of this immense force. One experience I'd love to share with you, I was living, I was 25, and I was living by the sea in South India, and I had dinner, and I was walking back to the hotel, which was by the sea, and suddenly it was as if my head had been split open like a coconut that had been axed, and I saw this white diamond light being emanated from everything, and I heard this great sound that the universe was saying, which is the Om sound. I didn't know anything about Om at that time. I understood beyond thought that everything that I'd learned, and I'd been wildly overeducated. I mean, I'd read everything, and I'd been elected a professor at Oxford, you know, fellow of all souls and all that. Everything I had learned had not prepared me for this experience, which was obviously the truth. When you have a mystical experience, there, you can't hide from it. You can't pretend it's not going on, because it's so overwhelming and so self-evidently real and true and powerful that you cannot deny it. So I realized that I had to plunge into this. I could not turn away, and that it contained the secret not only for my own personal happiness, and I was unhappy and I needed to feel that there was something worth living for, but it also increasingly became clear to me that this experience was also the key to the force, the power, that if we humbly could harness it, would be a force and power that could change the horrifically unjust structures of our world. So I never lost my political passion, but I understood that there's a force greater even than human reason and human outrage and human indignation and human effort. There is a divine force of love, a divine force of absolute compassion that supports these human efforts for justice, and it's bringing together the divine power of love with the human passion for justice that is the core of sacred activism. And that's what my message is to people, and my message to Occupy. I talked to Occupy on several occasions. I said, thank you so much for turning up and giving us hope. Thank you for your courage. Thank you for your wildness. Thank you for your analysis. But understand that this is going to be a long haul, and to be strong enough and clear enough and patient enough and wise enough, we are all going to need more than human help. We're going to need help from the source of power itself. And that source is available to everyone. It lives in everyone. It's been known since the beginning of time. All the great religions are founded in it and spring from it. All the great mystics talk about it. And you don't have to be Einstein or Shakespeare or Rumi to get in contact with it. You just have to be willing and humble and admit you don't know and ask for help, and it will come to you and it will infuse you. And with the power that it gives, you can do anything, and you can shift this madness and turn this chaos into order.
Wow, very powerful. What's really interesting in working in the environment that I'm in is that I come into contact with a lot of elders, activists, you know, people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s who've been holding on to their vision and their hope for decades.
Yes.
And but are so exhausted.
Yes.
And then I see these younger people who are coming to it now, and they came with all this enthusiasm.
Yes.
But then they confronted the violence of the police state.
Yes.
And now they're beginning to show signs of real exhaustion.
Well, this is the big problem.
Yes.
If you only rely upon your human power, you will not be able, and let's get absolutely real about this, you will not be able to shift structures so dark, so desperate, so ferocious, and so ruthless as the structures that now control the world.
Mm-hmm.
All of the great movements that have truly transformed history, all of them that I can think of, and I'm thinking of the way in which Gandhi unseated the British Empire, I'm thinking about the way in which Martin Luther King prevented a horrific bloodbath in American society by holding up the splendor of the Christ consciousness, I'm thinking of the way in which the Dalai Lama has held together Tibetan society in the middle of the fire of the one of the greatest genocides of history. I'm thinking of the way in which Lech Walesa organized Solidarność and enabled the Polish people to move from oppression into democracy. I'm thinking about these people who've shown us the way. All of these people and all of these real movements have had to go deeper than merely human energy. They've had to tap into the essence of spiritual power to find the three things that you're going to need to make a movement of justice successful. You're going to need tremendous patience. You're going to need tremendous energy, and you're going to need tremendous wisdom. Patience runs out, I find, if you're just relying on your human self. Energy is easily depleted by defeat after defeat and disappointment and really seeing the ugly face of the fascism that threatens us. And wisdom, quite simply, cannot be attained without inspiration from the source of wisdom. Mm-hmm. So when you really understand this, you understand that the kind of movement that is necessary for our world to be preserved must be one that brings together the two most noble fires of the human soul. The fire of the passion for God that has been with us since the beginning of our creation journey and that has informed so much of the greatest of achievements of humanity, that and the fire of the passion for justice. And when you bring these two fires together, a third fire is created, which is the fire of love and wisdom in action. And we have seen this fire transform history again and again and again and again. And the time is now to birth this fire on an unprecedented scale and with unprecedented intensity of concentration, so that the world, whose very existence is now absolutely threatened, can not only be saved and preserved, but that so that we can be transformed by our passion into another kind of humanity that will never, ever, ever again allow such a global horror of oppression to arise.
Again, you're listening to Heart of Mind, and this is WBAI Radio here in New York City, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And we've been listening to Andrew Harvey. He is quite a gifted speaker as well as author and spiritual activist, Andrew Harvey. And you could learn more about his work at andrewharvey.net, N-E-T, andrewharvey.net. And this was an interview that took place a number of years ago. It's kind of, you can hear the date of it as we were speaking of the Occupy Wall Street movement, which really was at its height quite a number of years ago now. And the Occupy Wall Street movement is still very active, but it's becoming a lot smarter. It's becoming less confrontational and more organizing and working behind the scenes and working to deal with debt and working to deal with issues on a very powerful but less confrontational way. And so you can find out actually more about what's happening with Occupy Wall Street by going to OccupyWallStreet.org. And you can look at how they're looking and working towards solving problems and creating a world revolution. And I think that's something that we are all very much engaged in, at least the listeners and the producers here at WBAI. We are concerned, and we are working to create a world revolution, a global revolution. And really, we all have a different perspective. So we kind of are grouping into those perspectives and working on the issues as we see them, as we feel passionate about it. And one of the things that I find most passionate in life is the evolution of consciousness, the evolution of awareness, and the advancement, upliftment of our understanding of our innate spiritual power. And a lot of people don't attribute this power, don't give it its due, but I understand that a lot of the changes that do occur, as Andrew Harvey was speaking about very eloquently, are strengthened and fueled by that inner spiritual fire, that inner light that allows one to confront violence with a peaceful countenance, that allows one to inspire and galvanize many around them. And the way to do that, from my perspective, the quickest way and the most effective way, is to do it from the position of love, compassion, and unity, bringing people together in a unified action to change the world that we're living in, to change the situation that we're living in. And it also takes a lot of courage. When I look at many of the whistleblowers who have essentially sacrificed their liberty because they wanted to bring the truth into our awareness, that takes a great deal of courage. And most of us are not called to do something quite so courageous as some of these whistleblowers have done. But there are occasions in our lives when we are called to make a stand, to stand up, and to speak out for something. And the more we do that, and the more we do it as a unified whole, the more powerful that action will be. And the thing that I want to also focus on today is the importance of self-love and self-care and coming together in mutual support to build that energy, to build that fire, and to be able to use that energy as a form of sustaining through what can be the most challenging of times. There's going to be a very interesting, I think very special event taking place on Saturday. Well, there are two events on Saturday. One of them I am involved in, but this one is at the Summer Stage. And at Summer Stage presents The Big Quiet, a meditation in Central Park. And Summer Stage and the Medi Club invite you to join on Saturday, June 20th, at New Yorkers, as New Yorkers from all the five boroughs converge for the first Big Quiet, a 20-minute practice, agnostic moment of mass meditation and calm, and it's for all ages and experience levels. It's a free event, so for those of you who want to get together and become part of this unified expression of calmness and peace, then you can head out to Central Park on Saturday and participate in this Summer Stage event. I might myself check it out. You have to arrive by 5 p.m. sharp and to get comfortable and to prepare for this event. It's short. It's from 5:30 to 5:50. So it's a short, concentrated meditation experience. And there have actually been studies that have showed that when a collective of people come together to meditate and to magnify the presence of unity and peace, crime levels actually go down. The calmness begins to pervade throughout the community and the world because energy moves through space. It has no time and space, really. So when this collective of people come together, I'm sure it's going to have a really massive, excuse me, a massive impact on the overall energy of the city and the world. So it's always important to do things like this. Also on Saturday, I'll be meeting to do a meditation and Qigong practice in Prospect Park. And this is going to be happening in the afternoon. So we will be meeting at noon in front of the main library, and it's right off of Grand Army Plaza, very recognizable. And you could take the 2 and 3 trains to Grand Army Plaza stop and walk to the library, which is near the entrance to the park, but the library is a better landmark. We'll be meeting there at noon, and by 1 o'clock we will head into the park for our practice and meditation. You're welcome to join us. If you want more information, you can send an email, and the email is heartofmindradio@gmail.com. That's heartofmindradio@gmail.com, and you can email me about joining one of these practices, or if you didn't get all the details, or if you have any questions about the show or suggestions about the show. I'm always eager, really, to include local accessible resources to people to help in their sustenance and self-transformation and healing. And so I invite you to contact me at heartofmindradio@gmail.com. We don't have our phones or listener phones yet in the studio to take calls. Normally I would have opened up the phones and engage in a discussion and exchange over what we're speaking of, what we're listening to, and I really enjoy your input and insights that you share over the radio, because WBAI has listeners that are wise and are engaged, and it's always good to make that connection. You could always get on the internet and drop me an email right now at heartofmindradio@gmail.com, and I would be able to see that and interact with you over the air, whatever that question might be. And so you can try that if you want to engage in that way. We've been listening to Andrew Harvey, and this is a rebroadcast of an interview that was done several years ago. So there are some references from that particular moment of time when the world was very much in a heightened state of flux and there was a lot going on. And many, many people were engaged in the challenge of the status quo. But this is still going on, and WBAI is really the best place to hear about it, to engage with it, to learn more, and to come to understand how to sustain that movement, how to sustain your life as an activist in the world, as a caring person, as someone who is committed to bringing justice and a unification of humanity, and to bring an end to the violence and chaos that has been inserted and created and sustained and fueled and funded and supported by a small class, a small elite class that the Occupy movement referred to as the 1%. Well, it's time for all of that to end. And it can occur on two fronts, one being the activism, the confrontation, the being in the street, the protesting. The other is the holding our leaders accountable and getting them out of office and really being having discernment with whom we elect into office as we roll again into these campaigns and look at who's funding these candidates. Look at people's track records, what are their voting records, and really try to make decisions that are not impacted by the force of the dollar, by the force of media campaigns. And as we engage in this way, and we also engage in the activities of unity and really spreading the word about what we can do as a unified front, we can make greater inroads in changing the world. And so for me, spirituality is not a passive thing. It's something that is lighting a bonfire in the center of your being so that you can sustain yourself in a way that will allow you to continue, will allow these movements to continue, but they will also be sustained in a way that is uplifting on the level of spirit that is compassionate and peaceful. So it's a tall order. But in order to do that, we have to engage on the level of being in the world, but also engage ourselves and hold ourselves accountable in how we are relating to the people in our immediate world. Are we being forceful? Are we lacking compassion? Are we being judgmental of the activist who stands next to us? If I am a Marxist, can I respect the left, another form of lefty? If I am a Democrat, can I respect a Republican? If I'm a Republican, can I honor a Democrat? And it's time for us to stop using our political goals as a force and as a reason to demoralize and dehumanize other humans, other beings, because they hold a different opinion. And when we can start doing that on an individual level, then that will contribute energetically to the force of creating peace on the larger scale. We have to be able to do it individually, because when we fail to do it individually, then our little individual acts of indiscretion feed into that energy of chaos and make it stronger. And I believe that one of the reasons that things are changing is because people are growing consciously and are understanding the need to be compassionate in every action, understand the need for finding unity and common goals rather than pointing out the differences between us. These are very, very important steps for us to take as individuals in our everyday occurrences with the people we encounter in our personal lives, so that when we take that action on a national and global scale, we can take that action with full integrity. And with that integrity and with that heart engaged and ignited with the power of the divine will, then our accomplishments will be magnified. So for me, that's what spirituality is. It's about being a spiritual, I want to say warrior, but I don't want to go into the mode of fighting, but it's really about being a master of the art of transformation and unifying ourselves so that we can defeat in a peaceful way those forces that would enslave and continue to exploit humanity and the planet. So we're at a breaking point or a transformation point. The chaos may continue for a time, but we must guard against falling into that chaos in terms of our integrity, in terms of our consciousness, in terms of our understanding, so that we are not the ones who are running into the street creating violence in order to win for our side. And I think very often that does occur. When people are advocating for change, they'll resort to violence in order to get that change, or they'll resort to behavior that is without integrity because they feel that it is the goal supersedes the behavior. But as to have integrity on a spiritual level, you can't make that separation. There must be unified integrity of self in the action of change and transformation. So it's an inner work as we do the outer work. And that's what true spiritual mastery is about. So I'm going to play another piece for you. I have about another 5-10 minutes before making way for Hour of the Wolf coming up at 1:30. So I think I'm going to share with you a piece from Andrew Harvey. He has a CD called Body and Soul Meditation. And there are two pieces, Relaxation to the Deeper Core, which I would play if I wanted you to really zone out. So I'm going to go with my vision of a holy being, I think. And that way you can have a little bit more insight into the work of Andrew Harvey, and you can save the deep relaxation for another time. I would invite you also, if you're interested in engaging and learning meditation practices, to check out my website, qigongonline.net. That starts with a Q. Qigong online.net, and you will find meditations there, and you can sign up for more information and different kinds of audio and video programs online. So check that out, and I'm going to play this for you, my vision of a holy being. And if we have time, I'll come back before the end of the program. I should have a little time if I get started now. Stay tuned.
Any human life is full of anguish, bewilderment, and stress. And so any human being needs a very strong and very effective heart practice that keeps their heart always open to the divine and to other beings. And the heart practice I'm about to share with you is the one that I've found most effective in keeping my heart open in sometimes very terrible and very painful situations. It can be done anywhere, at any time, in any circumstances, and it always, always works. There is a bright spring sky in front of you. Invoke that divine being in whom you have total trust. And if you can't imagine any particular being, don't worry. imagine a sun or a star of tender white light in the sky in front of you. What you must now know is that that being that you've invoked, or that star or that sun that you have called up out of your imagination to radiate in the sky in front of you, represents the divine. The divine that loves you completely, loves you unconditionally, and is completely concerned with your welfare and well-being, and wants you, above all things, to be healed of whatever you are going through and to live in the fullness of true joy. What you must also now know, and know without any shadow of a doubt, is that you are intimately and finally known by that divine being that you've invoked, and you don't need to hide anything, nor do you need to edit anything that you are about to say to that being. You can be as naked, as shameless, as sad, as disjointed, as garbled, as you need to be to express the full range of whatever you are feeling. So please now, open your heart to the being or the presence before you. Open your heart completely. Open your heart from where you are, from what you are suffering, and start to speak to that being. Don't use fancy words. Don't use any religious formulae. Just speak out of the crisis that you are enduring. Know that the being is listening to you with total attention and compassion, and know that it is not for a moment judging you. Call to the being now from the depths of your pain and confusion, telling her or him what you are going through, what you need, with the simplicity of a child addressing its mother or father. As you do so, it helps to say a line of a prayer that truly inspires you. Because I love Mary, I often say Hail Mary, full of grace. Another friend who does this practice says the word of the ancient Russian prayer, Mother of God, save me. And as you go on talking to the being that you've summoned, really, really expressing what you're suffering and feeling, imagine that that being begins to emit sacred white light. This sacred white light is the light of God's love, and the light that is manifesting and nourishing all things in the universe. Imagine that it now emanates in great healing waves from whatever presence you have chosen, and entering your body washes it free of all psychic and physical pain. Let the light enter you. Let the light wash you fresh. Let the light wash you clean with its immense power of love and purification again and again, again and again. And if you still feel that you're still in fear or still in distress or still in anguish or still in bewilderment, then go on. Even as the light is penetrating you and washing you clean, go on expressing your bewilderment, because you will get even more help, even more grace, even more power of love will stream to you. The more you call out, the more you say you need. So don't stop until you truly have felt the great glowing peace that comes from the light of love. Each time the light enters, offer up another grief, or another worry, or another dark impulse for healing and transformation. You will be feeling increasingly filled with the peace of love. And as these feelings deepen, allow yourself to relax more and more. Enjoy the divine smile that is growing in your heart. Finally, full of the presence, appeased, consoled, and at rest, allow yourself to rest in the presence, to rest in the light, to rest in the peace of love.
This is Douglas Spotted Eagle, Sunrise Prayer, and we heard from Andrew Harvey. That was an archival interview, but he's still very active, and you can find out more at andrewharvey.net. You're welcome to join me for meditation and Qigong on Saturday in Prospect Park. We're meeting at the Grand Army Plaza Main Library at noon. And there's another meditation at Summer Stage, put together by another group, actually, at 5 p.m. And it's called The Big Quiet. So you can do a lot to engage in your own self-healing as we work together to transform our world. And you've been listening to Heart of Mind over at WBAI, 99.5 FM. WBAI.org. Stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf.
good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program, mostly, of science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, speaking of archival interviews, an interview with Susanna Clarke, author of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. Stay tuned.
Of a platform for getting the in person's move.
Let's try that again, shall we?
In person's movie.
Okay, Dan, hold on. We'll get you started here. When they call this movie you're reviewing Jurassic World, I think they were talking about this studio.
In-person's movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. Jurassic World is a missed opportunity. Over $500 million in worldwide box office, the makers had a hell of a platform for getting their point across, and they don't quite stick it. The big gag, if you can call it that, of Jurassic World is that sometime in the near future, the public has become so jaded with revivified dinosaurs that the vast corporation running the titular theme park to continually come up with bigger, louder, more impressive creatures to lure the rubes back in. You don't have to be Andre Bazin to pick up the metaphor here. You do maybe need to be something of a mind reader to figure out if director Colin Trevorrow is directing this critique at his own corporate masters who initiated this pointless sequel, or to the perceived insistence of the general public for bigger, louder, etc., etc. Which, by the way, I think is bourgeois. People want to be entertained. It's up to the filmmaker to determine if he or she is going to do it in a way that intrigues and challenges, or that just cynically turns up the CG to 11 and lets it flood over the audience's eyeballs without triggering anything beyond an adrenal response. Since Trevorrow's previous film, the indie release Safety Not Guaranteed, played like something scientifically calculated to include all the elements of a standard, quirky independent film, I'm not quick to dismiss the latter as his goal. Whatever the intent, it does rob Jurassic World of the awe and wonder that made the original Jurassic Park so memorable. There's no big moment that allows you to just revel in the notion of prehistoric life once again walking the earth. Much like the jaded tourists crowding the theme park's streets, the film takes it all in stride, nowhere more galling than when John Williams' magnificent Jurassic Park theme is used for a flyover of the park's shopping strip, putting the marvelous notion of living, breathing dinosaurs on equal footing with a Margaritaville. Some of the sequences do have a fresh kick to them. A tense sequence where a couple of kids are attacked in a motorized hamster ball by the film's big bad, the Indominus Rex, or a moment when Chris Pratt goes on a motorcycle run with his beloved pet velociraptors. But when the finale is essentially a tripling down of the original film's ending, you're once again left wondering if Trevorrow sees the irony of snarking at overloaded summer fare while indulging in its excesses, or is just bending to commercial demands. There are many moments in Jurassic World that seem to ape the beats of Jurassic Park in service of critique, but Trevorrow has nowhere near the finesse of Spielberg, so if they are meant to advance the subtext, they fall flat. If they're just supposed to be thrills, they're soulless, hollow thrills. Where Trevorrow does succeed in following Spielberg's lead is in Jurassic World's somewhat retrograde attitude towards gender. When I first heard of Joss Whedon's criticism of the film for its cliche presentation of Bryce Dallas Howard's pants-suited businesswoman, I took it with a grain of salt, seeing as his assessment appeared to be based on exactly one scene from the film. But no, it's just as lazy and primitive as Whedon warned, and, by the way, not too far removed from the same type of stock characterization that failed to engage me in Safety Not Guaranteed. As for Chris Pratt, whose character Owen seems to have been hired at the park to fill a job category called all-purpose action hero, his good-natured lunk persona only goes so far. Then you need someone like James Gunn to make the character really snap. There was never a need for a third Jurassic Park sequel. I suppose I should credit Colin Trevorrow for trying to get a pertinent idea across, but by either intent or accident, that point gets lost while trying to fulfill the perceived demands of the summer market. As underwhelmed as I was by Mad Max Fury Road, and I admit I'm in the minority there, I was still able to appreciate its audacity and ingenuity. Jurassic World fails in the very elements it needed to get its message across. It's one of a long line of films that, intending to criticize a thing, becomes the thing itself. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website. So if you want to check out what you missed, please go to MightyMoviePodcast.com.
Thank you, Dan. And, you know, I usually don't do reviews myself. Let's see, am I on? I'm never sure about this place. We did an entire program last week, and basically the transmitter and internet feed went off, and I owe such a deep apology to Lev Rosen, who went so far out of his way to be here, and I didn't make a local air check of the program. Usually I go home, get the air check from the WBAI archive, but the WBAI archive bleeped out at like 20 minutes into the show before his reading. Although different people said they heard it end at different times, so who knows. But we are going to present a program that I did air check this morning with Susanna Clark. But first, I wanted to do a review of something that I just watched tonight. I am on mailing lists, not for the big tentpole movies like Dan Persons gets, but I'm on the mailing list for a lot of the indie films, a lot of the smaller films, and I might even be bringing somebody in to do some of those lesser known and funded films at some point. But here's one from me that I saw a point from a PR person saying, you can get a streaming link. Well, cool. That means all I have to do is sit at home, turn on the computer, send the computer image and sound to the TV set, and watch the movie. And so I did. and it was Julie Taymor's version of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And I was going to be very skeptical about it because there is always so much controversy over anything Julie Taymor does. And let me get the bad news out of the way first. At the beginning of the movie, it's a movie of a play. It's not a movie movie. It's a movie of a play. I think it's marketed as a Fathom event, one that people go primarily to movie theaters to see on a big screen. The sound begins awful. There's a lot of phasing noise, out of phase. Obviously, something was wrong with the microphones. It eventually gets much better, and you stop noticing. But at the very beginning, it's quite distracting. And, oh, yes, it's Shakespeare. Tain't normal American English. So one wants to pay attention, even when it's the dream, and you know it so well by heart. Number two, I didn't appreciate some of the movie jiggly camera work that was done. The rest, ooh, motorcycles on Atlantic Avenue, you hear that? The rest of my comments are, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent. I didn't even know I was going to watch it all the way through before coming here, but I couldn't stop watching. It was lovely. It was slightly abridged, especially in the Pyramus and Thisbe part, but the whole play is there, and the Shakespeare comes through, and it comes through so well. And it's a fabulous interpretation using puppetry. When it's Julie Taymor, it's always puppetry, big flowing sheets, a Oberon.